Every single day I feel it.
Artlist IO.
Every single day I feel the pressure. Double up the work, let's make it extra. Working so my mother get a rest, yeah. Working like I never knew I'm best, yeah. Every single day I feel the pressure.
Hey, welcome back to That One Studio. It's your boy C-Rock on the What Are You Made Of show. Another great guest in the house today. Dr. Mark Kostas is in the building. This guy's not just settling for one thing, man. He accomplished something and he tacks on before you know it. I'm going to just go through some of the things that this gentleman does. Then we're going to dive into his story and find out what he's made of. But he's an entrepreneur, best-selling author, international keynote speaker, and host of the Dentalpreneur podcast. And listen to this. They've done 10 million downloads, 2,000 plus episodes. And the thing about this is, man, I always talk about people like, man, I've been on over 1,000 podcasts in the last 5 years, 700 of my own show. There's always somebody out there doing more, have done more. So I love it, man. And during his 21-year clinical career, Marcus was able to start and acquire 16 dental practices in California and Arizona. He's the founder of Dental Success Institute. And just jamming, dude. So what's happening, Mark? Thanks for coming on the show today.
C-Rock, how you doing today, man? Thank you so much. I'm honored to be here today with you.
Yeah, dude. And how many shows have you been on? Besides your 2,000 episodes, how many guest appearances have you made? Would you guess? Give me the example.
I'm really, really admiring the fact that you've kept track of that. I have no idea. Probably in the hundreds, in all different genres, you know, business, personal development, a lot of dentistry stuff, a lot of physicians, attorneys, gym owners, because my original mentor was kind of what I do for gym owners. So yeah, man, I've been a lot, hundreds.
Yeah. Have you noticed something besides your show? Have you noticed something about going on shows and the power of it and what benefit it got you?
Yeah. It's funny because I have a lot of mentors that say, you know, unless they have a significant following, you want to kind of be careful with your time and stuff. And in the beginning, I would say yes to anything, even if they had, you know, 3 episodes. And you know, the track record for podcasts is not great as far as the longevity and staying power of podcasts. But, you know, in the beginning, I would just say yes to everybody. I would consider a good live speaking engagement 750 to 1,000 people. But even, you know, an average podcast will get that many downloads per episode. So I always saw it as, hey, man, this is a group of people that's never heard of me. This is a group of people that I could most definitely engage with and find some commonality with. So I've always used kind of podcasts and guest appearances as a way to build a brand for sure.
Yeah, I love it. Like, a lot of people don't realize you can get content from it. Like, it's content you could break up and repurpose, and you know, it's so you know, Gary Vee does this thing where he would get interviewed by his people. He would just have his people have a camera and they would ask him some questions and then he would answer questions. It's kind of like a podcast that doesn't have any viewers, except he took the ownership and got the viewers with it. So it's content. And to me, I'll go on somebody and be their first guest. It's worth it. Cause also those people that are just starting their podcast, if they get a guy like Dr. Mark on their show, or C-Rock, you might become a hero to them. And isn't that kind of what we're trying to do out there anyway? Besides the money and building businesses, we're trying to impact and be heroes to people, aren't we?
Absolutely. That's a really good point. You know, and we repurpose everything. So if I'm asking questions to somebody, we're getting a bunch of content based on what they think about the world or that particular question from their lens. But if I have the opportunity of being on somebody's show, I get their questions and through their lens, and I'm able to kind of convey that according to, you know, what I think their audience wants to hear, or what's pertinent and what's actionable for their audience rather. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Love it, man. All right. Let me ask you the question. I don't usually go on that long bit without asking this show opener, but Dr. Mark, what are you made of, man?
Yeah, I've listened to a bunch of your podcasts in the past and some of your YouTube content, and I see that you kind of open your shows with this. That's such a great question. That's the most open-ended question you could possibly ask anybody, man. So to me, it's, you know, grit, tenacity, perseverance. I know that sounds kind of cliche, but for me, it really, really has been everything. For me, it took 3 years and 21 tries to get into dental school. For me, that was my way out of kind of mediocrity. And I knew that I wanted to do something patient-based, healthcare-based. When I looked at medical school, I recognized that there's not a whole lot of wiggle room for entrepreneurship in medicine. So I selected dentistry, but, you know, I had the typical, everybody uses this nowadays, but I had, you know, ADD, attention issues, dyslexia. All my sons suffer from the same kind of issues. So I had a difficult time getting into the professional program, but, you know, 21 tries, there's literally 20 rejection letters that I have in a box and a single acceptance over a 3-year period of time. And when I got in, finally, you know, I had my face pressed against the glass for years, just like, I want to be where these guys are. When I finally got in, I realized, and I promised myself, almost like kind of making a deal with the devil, I promise if I ever get a single acceptance, I'll never take my degree for granted, and I'll do everything I could possibly do to leverage this doctoral degree. And so, yeah, that's my word, grit, and that's what I'm made of.
Yeah. And so you start off in the industry, not even being able to get into school to get into the industry first. So a lot of people start a business and have hurdles and roadblocks. You were like even pre-stage before that. So yeah. What is it about people that like to get into healthcare? What is it about them that draws them to that? Like, you know, obviously some parents want their kids to be doctors, so they push them to be doctors, right? Mm-hmm. And then those mm-hmm. kids end up living and chasing the goals of their parents. But then there's others that have this really desire to go in and into healthcare. What is it like?
Yeah, Mike, that's an awesome question. I think that early on, we're kind of indoctrinated, especially, you know, if you are an immigrant. I'm son of an immigrant, first generation American. For immigrants, I will say, school is the clearest path to quote unquote success, societal success. Financial success, security more than anything else. I mean, you look at the typical physician or dentist, they're making 3, 4, 5 times the average salary of the average person in the United States, which is good. But you and I both know that you reach a ceiling when you are in even a very, very high net income profession, attorneys, physicians, dentists, architects. But those people are all trading dollars for hours. No matter how you slice it, it's a dollars or hours for dollars type of service-based profession. So if you're looking for just, you know, financial reward and societal admiration, that's a great way to go. But you figure out very, very quickly that there is a ceiling. There's a cap to how much you can make. But I believe that people that are attracted to healthcare in the first place are people that are interested in helping people regardless of, you know, the financial rewards. There is kind of the icing on the cake and the cherry on top of being able to make a lot of money at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. And what is it about you that's, you know, made you want to go after multiple practices and then help other people with not just dentistry and help them with their teeth and, you know, their health there, but like also just go out and make people better. Like what, like, do you have a story from when you were a kid or something that catalyzed that, or where's that come from?
So it's great. So there's a couple for me that, you know, dinner table conversation at my house was not about sports. It wasn't about, even though I was an avid, you know, athlete growing up, it wasn't about sports. It wasn't about, you know, the Kardashians. It wasn't about pop culture. Like when we sat around the dinner table, it was my mom, my dad, and my sister and I talking about business. We talked about, you know, our uncle in the Philippines that had a shipping line. And we talked about my aunt who just bought her third car so she could start a rental car agency. Or my other aunt that had a prawn farm over here in the provinces. And, you know, making sure that my parents instilled in me that there was a better way than just working for somebody. My dad was an electrical engineer. Very, very high income for a W-2 employee. But he always told me, hey, look, I'm doing this for the security of the family. You got to go out and you got to make your own way. You got to have your own business. So when I decided that I wanted to be a healthcare provider, I chose dentistry because of the flexibility and the ability to become an entrepreneur within that profession. I knew that even when I was going to dental school, that my primary focus, even after I got out, was going to be able to build the largest organization that I could and maintain a really, really high quality experience for the patients, but also for the people that worked for me. So, you know, at one point I had over 150 employees and 16 locations in 2 different states. And I I stuck to that mission of being able to expand, but not just for the sake of expansion, but to be able to serve, you know, the patient base and the providers within my practices with the best lifestyle and the best experience. So that was kind of what attracted me to multiple practice ownership in the first place. But then when I was building those multiple practices, I realized that there was, you know, a segment of the healthcare population that were like, geez, that's not super intuitive. I could barely build one practice. How is he able to build 10, 15, 16 practices? So I started getting asked to talk on stages, and that's when I started the podcast, and that's when I started this coaching and consulting group, and things just kind of spun from there. And it's quite unique to be a multiple practice owner to the degree that I was able to build it up, but it doesn't mean that it was smooth sailing. I think most of the great things that I'm able to talk to about people is all the mistakes that I made and kind of accelerate their progress based on being able to navigate some of the things that I did wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of chiropractors and dentists that are sucked up. Like their time is sucked up. Like they don't, you know, they're back to back to back when they get there. You can't get an appointment with them anywhere. Like it's just crazy. And I try to like get to them like, hey, you know, you can scale this. And mm-hmm. And so I know how to scale a business, but I'd love to hear from you what your point of view was to your framework kind of or principles that guided you into being able to scale and add employees. Like, you know, there's a, I don't want to say too much. I'll let you speak on it.
No, that's great. That's a great segue. Thank you. You know, it's interesting. I've heard so many times, especially with this, you know, internet and software generation, you can really literally make money from anywhere with the laptop or even just a smartphone. Remember when that was just kind of a big deal when people used to use that as the headline of their sales letter? It's like, make millions anywhere in the world from your smartphone. It was like, oh, that sounds revolutionary, but there's poolside. People, you know, there's, yeah, exactly. In your underwear. It's like, people said that. But, you know, nowadays that's kind of commonplace and you can see it, you know, the real evidence of it online and YouTube personalities and influencers, et cetera. But I mean, brick and mortar is the hardest way to scale any type of business, right? So brick and mortar businesses are tough. Human beings, where you show up to an actual building and you're working face to face with customers, that's very tough. And then you add to that a healthcare component and the whole component of all the people that work for you have to have a very specialized skill set. And if they don't have it, you have to train them into it. It's not like you could build, you know, 15 dental practices and throw a 17-year-old and have them flip burgers all day long. That is not the nature of this type of business. So I realized that, like, if I was going to be able to scale this thing, I was going to have A, some sort of a mechanism for onboarding and training people that potentially had no experience in the industry. So I actually created that. And then I also had to have a recruiting arm. People had to come and want to work for me. I'd have the best compensation and the best kind of work environment and the best trained team in order to support them to be more productive so that they could bring home a higher level of income. And then after I had a certain number of them, I realized that, holy cow, I can only spread myself so thin. I can only plug in to a clinical area to so many practices. After about three or four practices, I was useless as a clinician. So I was going to have to sit down, put my leadership hat on, assemble a leadership team, and make sure that they were kind of watching the individual practices while I was focusing on expansion, frameworks, marketing, getting new customers / patients in the doors for all the practices that I built. So making that switch and knowing when to make that switch from actual technician to entrepreneur to CEO to assembler of leadership team, those are all stages kind of scaling an entrepreneurial venture. And I'll say, like, now that I know how to do that for brick and mortar and for especially difficult brick and mortar, which is healthcare, I feel like I could do it in a lot of different areas.
Yeah. A lot of it will translate to pretty much anything. I agree. Now culture / community of your organization is so important, right? It's actually kind of dictates the health of the company. So can you take us through the evolution of one, your understanding of how important culture and community was in the organization, and then also your development of it inside the organization?
Yeah, culture to me, there's a couple of subjective measures of business ownership that a lot of people feel like are untrackable, unmeasurable. Leadership is one, and leadership leads to a strong culture within your organization. So if you could take that subjective measure of leadership and culture and turn it into something that's measurable and trackable from day to day, you're onto something there. And you have the ability to kind of maintain a strong culture and to be able to tell precisely when it starts to degrade, right? So if you take something like culture, we take, you know, core values and the creation of those core values very, very seriously within each of our practices that we coach and within the companies that I own. So one of the core tenets of being able to create good core values is you have to have authorship of the key people on your team in the core values. So if I just sat down with you, C-Rock, one afternoon, one Sunday, and said, hey, I'm starting three new companies. Help me create the core values of these three companies. And then when I get there on opening day, I'm going to have, you know, 15 people working for me. I'm going to present to them these core values that I came up with, you and I came up with in our heads, and try to cram them down their throats. That actually does not work. You have to get authorship and feedback from each of the people that are in key positions on your team to help create those core values. And once those core values are created, say you have 5 or 7 core values, you just write them down on a piece of paper. And with each kind of performance review, you're going over, all right, open and honest communication is our number one core value. Continual learning is another core value. And you just go down and you have like a reflective moment with each of these key people in mind, and you give them a score, right? A score from 0 to 10 or 0 to 5. Open and honest communication. If this person is the person that's the pot stirrer in your organization, or if this person is constantly gossiping about other people in your organization, if you're going to stay true to those core values, no matter how valuable they are in other realms, you're going to have a discussion with them about, hey, listen, if you're going to be a key part of this organization, or even if you're going to last in this organization, you're going to have to abide by our number one core value. And then you have just an area of kind of objective measurement now. Like, here's how you measure up in all of our core values. You've just taken something subjective that's fuzzy, and I don't know how to measure culture or how to instill it in my practice, and you've turned it into something objective. You can do the same thing with leadership, you know? So that's kind of how we've always looked at building a culture and a strong leader within each of our individual offices.
Yeah, and I'm going to tell you right now, there's no way you would have went to 16 locations and had any success without that. Like, that's imperative. Like, that's the foundation right there. And you didn't start with that, did you? Or did you have, like, did you start and then did some training or learning or realize and then implemented that into your company? Like, what was it like prior to implementing that stuff?
Yeah, it was ugly, dude. Like, my first 6 dental practices, I was just hard charging. I was driving. I was scrapping. I had hit my maximum of the capital that I could borrow from traditional banks, right? They said, you could borrow $3 million for us. And really, the way that it works in banking is they'll throw $1 million at you really quickly as soon as you graduate from dental school, even if you have, you know, $500,000 in student loan debt, because the default rate for dentists is so low for loans to start or acquire a business. So $1 million, no problem. They'll throw it at you. They know that even if you struggle, you're not going to default on it. It's like 0.06% default rate for dentists for up to $1 million for a single practice. But that decreases significantly with each practice that you add to, you know, your portfolio. More dentists fail as they expand. So the banks kind of have a stop loss and they say, all right, good. You have 3 good successful dental practices. We're not lending you any more money because our actuarial tables say that your 4th, 5th, and 6th are going to be where you're more likely to default on all the loans that we've loaned you. So, for me, it was like I was just hard charging, and I maxed out the amount of debt that I could take for expansion. And so I was finding these off-market deals, we'll say, that where practices were struggling or about to go bankrupt. And I would swoop in and say, hey, I can help you with this practice. Just sign it over to me, or I'll sign the lease on the dotted line. I'll take over all your debt. and then we'll continue to march forward. And I did that all the way up to 6 dental practices. It was necessary at the time, but man, I didn't know jack about how to run a successful business from a cultural and leadership standpoint. I thought that, you know, I had these first three that were super successful. I didn't connect the dots in that I was the person that was holding all of that together. And as soon as we got to 4, 5, and 6, it was like I couldn't be everywhere at one time. So that was when I started to realize, hey, man, I have to learn how to recruit and train and create a leadership team that's going to be looking over this stuff as I continue my expansion. So it was a bit of a rocky start. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Because if you're not there, if you can create a thing that people can self-manage themselves and others and hold each other accountable with guidelines and guardrails in a way, you don't have to be there. So it's phenomenal. Exactly. I'm glad you figured that out. Was there a specific moment where you were like, dude, I got to figure this out? Do you remember like a specific moment? And then what did you do about it?
You asked the best questions, man. Yeah. There was a specific moment. When I was 15 years old, I ran into, my very first book that I ever read cover to cover, and I was Think and Grow Rich, and my dad's, I'll call it library. It was the spare room where he did kind of some of his home work. And I read that thing cover to cover, and I just remember still distinctly, my dad had read that thing probably, I don't know, a dozen times, because like there was dog-eared corners, and he had notes in the margin, some highlighted stuff and underlined stuff. And it made a huge, huge impression on me. And so when I was, I guess, building this this vision in my mind of what I wanted to do with my life, it didn't include dentistry at the time. I just created in my head that, hey, in 20 years, I was reasonable. In 20 years, I want to be a millionaire. And to me, I couldn't even imagine more money than $1 million in the bank and netting $1 million at the end of every year. And so I worked towards that. And the multiple practice ownership went back to that original goal of, I just want to be a millionaire by the time I'm 35 years old. And so I built up these first 6 dental practices. And I remember the day that it happened, my CPA was like, hey, check out your tax return. We need to e-file this by midnight tonight. We're pushing up against this deadline. I opened up my laptop and I saw it for the very first time. I was 38, so I missed it by 3 years, but I was 38 years old. I already had $1 million, more than $1 million cash in the bank. And there it was. That year I made like $1,034 or something like that on my W-2. And I just remember closing my laptop and going, damn, is this what this is supposed to feel like? Because it feels terrible. I had never been more miserable in my life. I was unhealthy. I was working 80-hour weeks. I was eating fast food, drinking way too much at night to go to sleep. My personal relationship was on the rocks. I was not seeing my kids because I was working so hard. And I was like, damn, I really have to change something drastically or else I'm going to implode. And this singular focus, singular financial goal did not bring me any fulfillment or joy or happiness at all. But I accomplished it. I checked it off the list. So it was at that point where I actually sold a handful of my practices, went down to 2 practices, and then recreated the systems that you were talking about earlier. And once I had those figured out, I mean, the sky was the limit. We got to 10 practices very, very quickly, and I cut my work week in half. I was much more fulfilled, much healthier in every aspect of the word. And it all came down to having it nearly burned down before I realized that I had to do it totally differently.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew I could dig and get that story out of you, because that's what it is, man. It happens so often. And there's people right now that they're in that exact situation, working their ass off, grinding, thinking that you got to put all this time in. You know, you got to put time in, but a lot of time, if we look back and assess the time that we actually do sometimes when we're not on point, not in alignment, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot of bullshit work, you know, and we just do it to feel busy and to justify our, you know, like make ourselves feel better. But it's a lot of people going through that, man. And who did you get help from? Was there somebody you looked out to, a book you read at that point, or where did you start understanding the values of core values?
Yeah. When I graduated, there was not a whole lot of stuff for dentists. I mean, it was like literally, like I graduated dental school in 2002. So I've been doing this for a minute. I graduated dental school in 2002. And when I graduated, I wanted to you know, have that crash course in business. Incidentally, that 3 years that I was waiting to get into dental school, I was in San Diego, and I had applied for and got into the executive MBA program at the University of San Diego. So I was almost done with my master's in business when I graduated, when I got accepted to dental school, at which point that I dropped out of the executive MBA program. But on top of that, I also bought my very first business. That was a catering truck, a taco truck, basically. So by day, I would drive a taco truck from construction site to construction site, and I'd sell, you know, Marlboro Lights and black coffee and burritos to the construction workers. And I had my full route, like a glorified, you know, ice cream man. I'd honk my horn. I'd come to a construction site, sell out my stuff. And then I had a cook in the back. And so that was by day. And by night, I was getting my executive MBA training. And if you were to ask me, like, side by side, what was more valuable from an entrepreneurial perspective, like this taco truck thing or an executive MBA, 10 times out of 10, I'll tell you, the taco truck was way more valuable as far as real life lessons in entrepreneurship. Like the owner of the business gets paid last. I learned about, you know, sales, because I had to go to these construction foremen. The hardest people in the world to talk to and to sell to is a construction foreman. Let me tell you that. Like chasing after somebody with a hard hat on, that's not the best way to spend your day. But man, it helped me like really, really build some thick skin and to learn how to sell. Marketing, sales, how to read a P&L and a balance sheet and a cash flow statement, the difference between all of those. Like that was probably the most valuable 3 years of my entire business life. And that was while I was trying to get into my program. So
awesome.
Those were totally invaluable years. I wouldn't give those up for anything.
Yeah. You know, I hope the listener, you know, I hope they're picking that up, because I took a couple courses at the Wharton School, and everybody looks at that as the, man, that's the place, you know, and
one of the best.
Man,
yeah.
I spent 20 years in the mortgage real estate business and learned way more in the first year, 2 years, whatever. So yeah, I'm with you 100%. So you strike me as a lifetime learner and an observer and curious person. So is that the case? Like you continuously don't feel like you have it all together as far as what you need to do. And you're always looking for ways to do things better. And I know, cause when you teach people, you're always looking for something else to give them too, right? Is that how you roll, or?
Absolutely. I'm a consummate content consumer to the point where sometimes I have to pull back and say, all right, dude, so you've read 6 books in the last 4 months and you haven't applied any of it. So chill out, go back. You know, I take copious notes of everything that I'm reading. So I go back and I'll review my notes and I'll work that into my journaling as well. I journal every morning, but I'll just kind of review and revisit and like, how can I take this and apply it to my personal businesses? And then, like you said, the more you are able to share that information and teach that information, the more ingrained it gets into your own psyche and into your own businesses. So, I mean, I have a big responsibility. I have 1,430 people that pay me money on a monthly basis for coaching and consulting and you know, the podcast as well. I have almost 2,000, well, over 2,000 podcast episodes now. And that is a lot of content that I have to put out there. And not all of those are, you know, interviews. In fact, I would say probably 40% of all of those are interviews. The rest is like original content. And I'm speaking on stages and I want to be completely authentic. And I want to have, you know, the deepest integrity where I'm not just spoon feeding people shit that I listen to somebody else talk about. Like I need original thought. And with that comes a lot of content consumption. I just do. I mean, I'm often telling people, just be careful about the amount that you're consuming, because I've seen it happen time and time again, where people proselytize people and they pedestalize people and they follow every single thing that they do. And they never actually come up with an original thought, for one. And they never take action on the things that they're listening to. It's like mental masturbation. It's like, I need to hear more. I need to hear more. And that becomes the dopamine hit that you need. And that becomes separated from the dopamine hit of actually getting anything done at all. So that's something that I think everybody needs to be a little bit careful of.
Yeah, no, I agree, man. I found myself in that stage for a while. And then I think I caught myself pretty quickly. I was going through a lot of mentorship and masterminds and all this, and I was watching other people succeed. And the moment I noticed that it was time, okay, it's time to implement, right? I decided that I was getting to, you know, watching other people's success, and I started getting that feeling of like, mm-hmm. shit, man, they can do it. I can do it. Like, what's, and then maybe a little envy, honestly, which is not a good thing. Like, wait a minute. And then I had to explore inside, like, what's going on here? Why am I having this feeling? Like, there's something not right here, because that's not a good feeling to have. And then I looked in and I'm like, all right, you're not implementing enough. You're not taking enough action. All right, what do we got to do? And put a plan together. And so that's been there, man. So AI, let's talk about AI and what you're doing for coaching, consulting, content mm-hmm. production, and then also in business. How are mm-hmm. you currently using AI?
Oh, man. Almost every day, but at a very elementary level. Okay, so first of all, my two different businesses go like this. Right now, I have my two main businesses are a mastermind / individual coaching group, which is about 225 clients, which I think is kind of the top of the pyramid. And then I have what we would call, I guess it's called Dental Success Network, which is 1,430 members. They pay a monthly fee to get access to our online community, a buying group, and about 600-700 hours of continuing education that's delivered virtually. So that's the kind of the bottom level of this pyramid. And then I have different tiers of coaching groups in between till you hit the pinnacle, which is what we call Dental Success Institute or the Elite Practice Mastermind Group. Live events, quarterly meetings, the typical mastermind, but very, very, very high level stuff. And we have a belt system. You can come in as a white belt, blue belt, brown belt, or black belt.
Oh, awesome.
Our black belt kind of graduates of our mastermind program become our coaches because they've gone all the way through. They've proven that they have a very, very high acumen for leadership and business. And then they coach the other people within the ranks of the mastermind group. So we've been able to scale a mastermind group that goes beyond kind of where I can be and what I can teach. And if you're doing 230,
same thing with the dental practice. It's the same thing.
Exactly.
You got to the point where you
figuring
do
out
it.
How to scale. Exactly. Yeah. Figuring out how to scale. So, you know, with these two companies, we've been able to affect a large footprint in dentistry. There's 202,000 practicing dentists in the United States. So, you know, the CAC on our industry is relatively small, but then if you take like the people that are willing and interested in learning business, that shrinks all the way down to maybe, you know, like literally less than 50,000. And then of that 50,000, there's more probably consultants than I could shake a stick at this point, but we're the only ones that do it the way we do it. And I think that we get the best results by far. But the problem is that you have to really be cognizant of growth for growth's sake, because if we bring more people in and they disrupt the culture of our organization, it's just like the workplace or just like anywhere else where a group of people comes together. If you start to degrade the culture, then it starts to degrade the value of the actual experience. And so we've grown very, very intentionally and really kind of shepherded and taken care of all the people that are, I like to say, kind of followers and in our group. We treat them very, very much like family.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, let me share something with you. Okay. I've been studying on the AI and we are integrating AI in our business and helping others do the same, but this is something that for your coaching and for the dental practices, once 5% of any industry takes AI and puts it in as much as possible, implements as much as possible, the rest won't be able to catch up.
I love that.
So for those listening, once 5% adoption happens in any industry, the rest of the companies won't be able to catch up because of the learning that the AI does. And it'll learn about your company, it'll learn about. So there's obviously new things coming out every day, but there are AI being created right now that can look at your company and identify the gaps and tell you what to do to fix it. So one thing that you could separate yourself further from all the other consultants out there is start looking at AI at an elementary level, like you said, just start there, the gradient level, work your way up, and then start mm-hmm. helping them with that, what you learn, and that'll differentiate you even more.
That is amazing. See, Here's a good host. You didn't call me out for not even answering your question at all. I went down a rabbit hole and I didn't even answer. I said elementary use of AI and I didn't elaborate at all. So what we're doing right now, use it a lot. Yep. We use it a lot for the podcast. So we will transcribe every podcast episode, and those podcast episodes will be entered into an AI program, and then it will turn it into an outline. Those outlines will turn into hot topics, and then those topics will be also pointed out as far as time codes within a podcast, and then we'll make short form content based on that.
Yep.
So yep. That is a very elementary way of using it. I'll tell you what else we have, C-Rock. We have a really cool thing, and what makes us really, really different about our coaching is that we do financial reports for all of our members every single month. So we work directly with CPAs and bookkeepers. And we get all of the expenses and we create very, very specialized expense reports every single month for all of our clients. So where a lot of coaching groups will talk about, you know, leadership, which is really important, marketing, which is very important. Here's how you get new patients. Here's how you retain the patients once they're in your practice. And you can substitute customers anywhere I say patients. Right.
Yeah.
Those are some things that a lot of consultants talk about. Very few of them go into the granular kind of, all right, here's one category where you're overspending. Here's one where you're underspending and you have some opportunity. That's huge, here. Man. We could plug all of that into AI, and AI would be able to help us kind of decipher as a group. Here's how your group is performing. Here's some opportunities. Here's some risks for your group. So I really think that AI is like really going to be helpful in getting much more granular detail as far as how the group is performing and then each of the individuals as well.
Yeah, man, I love that. And, you know, I just put a post up today on Instagram about measurement. If you want to get better in any area, you need to measure it. And why is that important? When you measure it, it brings your attention to it. And when you bring attention to it, creativity happens. And so that's when you can create different, you know, ways to get better. But if you don't measure, and so what you're doing for them, you know, is measurement of the business expenses, income, like that's people don't focus on the top line enough in their business. So you grab the differentiating factor, which is one of the most important parts of the business, which I love it. So congratulations on that. Hey, listen, where can people listen to your podcast? What's the name of it?
Oh, sure. Dentalpreneur. Yeah. And if Dentalpreneur podcast, it's interesting. We have, like, we've done surveys before, and a good percentage of the listeners are not even dentists. We get physicians right in there, attorneys in there. I did a lot of speaking at fitness conferences for a period, and physicians conferences and law conferences. So I have a very mixed bag of listeners. So there's something for everybody there. It's called the Dentalpreneur Podcast, anywhere that you find podcasts. My socials are Dr. Mark Costas on Instagram or TikTok, and anywhere that you consume your media from.
Yeah. Remember guys, consume media, but also take action and implement what you find. So Dr. Costas, exactly. Man, appreciate you being here. It's been a great conversation. I could talk to you for hours about business and personal development and everything else, but we got to wrap the show up. Thanks for being here, right, man. It was phenomenal.
It's been my honor. Thank you so much. I hope to get you on my show sometime.
Let's go, man. I light it up. Let's go. Hey, man, hang tight while I wrap this up. Folks, thank you so much for listening or watching, however you're consuming this content. Please like and subscribe as we're growing the second season of the Woody Madoff Show back into the top 1% of all podcasts on the planet. I got to say, man, I mean, this the 10 million downloads, that's a target I got to get to, man. What was it, 10 million? Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you'll get there. I gotta get to that. I'm gonna have to pick Dr. Coach's brains or Costas's brains about how he did that. But well, listen, I'm always learning and trying to get better and get to the level of other people that are up there ahead of me. So, but guys, listen, keep coming back. And until next time, it's your boy C-Rock from That One Studio on the Woody Madoff Show. Beat That One. In the gym, I gotta get my-